Dave Oates, welcome to the show.
It's so good to see you, Dustin. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm very happy to have you here. I know we've had a discussion before about some of the things in your career journey and what you do. But before we jump into some of those things, could you just briefly announce yourself and tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. Thanks for the time. I'm Dave Oates. I do crisis communications, crisis management, crisis PR. So I'm the guy that business owners, executives of nonprofits, organizations, big and small, call when their reputation is being called out in some sort of public forum, right? Whether that's the employee water cooler talk, whether that's on, something like a Slack channel or in the press, Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn, Facebook, Glassdoor, Google, Yelp, Facebook, any sort of public discussion that is getting people to question whether they should work for you, do business with you, partner up with you, invest in you, donate to you. I'm the guy that usually comes in at those moments and helps them set up a communication plan so they can get back to normal operations and give a little space so they can fix whatever the issue was, even if it's simply miscommunication, and stave off what could be, in some cases, a real detriment to their ability to continue on in the same fashion they were before.
And I'd love to jump into some of the specific stories. You don't have to say any names or companies. You can limit that to whatever you want. But before we do that, could you talk a little bit about your origin story and your journey getting into your career? Because I think it's a fascinating experience.
Yeah, I appreciate that, right? So everybody asks, like, well, how did you go to school for this? And not in the same way you think so, right? I got into this profession in kind of a Bass Ackwards way. So I was a Navy officer and turned Navy public affairs officer. So after getting an ROTC scholarship and served as a midshipman in college setting, I got my commission, came out to San Diego and was training to drive ships, combat and engineering roles. And on my first ship, which was a guided missile frigate, I got the opportunity to take on a collateral duty, an additional duty in addition to those other roles, and it happened to be the public affairs officer. And I was like, sounds great. Not exactly sure what that means. So I started to find out what the job entails, and it was essentially being able to showcase and tell the Navy story through the eyes of my ship to not only the public through when we would go to ports of call and arrange tours and talk to media and pitch stories and things like that, but also to the internal audiences, to other sailors about how our ship was doing and how we were affecting essentially the United States Navy's mission in our own little world. And that included helping my commanding officer convey information to our crew. And, it was one of those aha moments when you're, in your mid-20s and you're like, whoa, wait a minute, this is exactly what I want to do with my life. I was a poli-sci major. I did what I call a footnote of college radio for a nanosecond. And I was a news junkie, and I realized this could be something that I could do for a long-term career. And then it was like, okay, how can I do it in the Navy? Because I found out there were about 200 officers out of something like 60,000 officers that did this as their full-time job, a handful of which were in San Diego, where I was based. So off-duty hours, and when I could get off the ship, I just basically knocked on these guys' door and was like, sir, I'm Lieutenant Dave Oates. I'm on board USS Sides. How do I get your job? And they were so great about taking me under their wing. And when I could get volunteer time off and things like that, I'd shadow them when they had a press conference or different other events that were going on. And they showed me, what their job was entailed. And then they were helpful in helping me navigate through this big, thick bureaucratic process to basically go in front of a review board in D.C. to request to change from basically a ship driver, surface warfare officer, to a public affairs officer. Third time was the charm. Perseverance is something we all have to learn. And so after about an 18-month period and three review boards, I got selected. And then I got sent to a two-month defense information school. Essentially, think about it like almost like an immersion school for PR, that we were basically 40 hours a week of classroom instruction plus assignments afterwards and things like that, and sort of simulated settings. In an 8-week period, I got what would be considered in many universities like a degree, and then got thrown right back out to the fleet. I mean, I'm in my late 20s, and the best job I had, I think, I had some really cool jobs. I was in Haiti for 6 months as a spokesperson. Not that Haiti is a great place to vacation, I'll tell you, but it was a great learning experience for me. But then the last assignment I had on active duty, I was the public affairs officer for the aircraft carrier USS John C. Stennis and the eight other ships in the battle group that went with us. So think about it like a corporate communications head of 7,500 person organization that traveled halfway around the world and back. I had seven fantastic journalists, some of whom I still keep in contact with. And we ran four channels of television, an FM radio station. We had a daily newspaper on board. I'm 29 years old. I had no business doing that. But the beautiful thing about the Navy is that they put you in the deep end of the pool and give you some critical thinking skills and off you go. And as expected, crisis was just part of the things we had to work on. I had plenty of those, from aircraft accidents to mishaps to Marines behaving, sailors and Marines not living up to their standards from that one there, and, you know, making the rest of us look bad. And we held them accountable for that. And I was the one who was speaking to the public about that. So, you know, those kind of scenarios were things that I learned very early on. And then I went into the private sector, worked for a couple of tech firms, and then went on my own and started doing crisis communications full time about 6 years ago, when for a whole host of technological reasons, everybody gets to take a pot shot at somebody. I saw a market need, and quite frankly, I wish I'd done it 10 years ago. That was a long answer, really, Dustin, but hopefully that gives you a little overview of how I got into this.
No, that's great. And there's so many different things that I'd love to dive into there. One, the fact that you found, when you say like I had that aha moment in my 20s, I didn't have many of those moments in my 20s. it took me, I'm still trying to figure out. I think we're all still trying to figure out. But 100%. The fact that you said, I have this ability, I have this desire, I have this talent, and you were able to find a place for it and people took you under a wing, I think it's quite remarkable. And I love to hear those stories about people that have those mentors or can find that level of support, or those people that support them and help them find their path. I mean, that's a big part of why I do this podcast, because I love those stories and I feel like I wish I had more of them in my life. And this is my way of doing that, is hearing other people's experiences.
I appreciate you bringing that up, because I will credit my military background for my success today. And not to say I didn't learn things along the way, and I didn't. I went back and got my MBA, and I tried different things and not succeeded in certain areas and all that. But the foundational elements of being 9 years in the Navy was critical, not just because it gave me the opportunity to sort of learn a career in public affairs for all the academic and experience that I said that I achieved. But the military operates almost in an apprentice style training format. There are great classroom curriculums and training programs that they have in place, and important that they do. The on-the-job training that is inherent in military culture, at least it certainly was for Navy culture, where you are basically shadowing people senior to you who mentor you along the way, teach you not only how to do some sort of technical specifications, but in the case of me as an officer, teach you how to be a leader, teach you how to think critically, teach you how to think critically quickly. And that critical, quick thinking is directly translatable to what I do now, because unlike, you know, proactive marketing PR strategies where you can create focus groups and surveys and you can sort of test market different things, you know, if something goes down and people are squawking about it, or you get an inquiry from a reporter, you don't have all day to think about it. You oftentimes have an hour before something's going to get posted and go viral. And that narrative gets set, right or wrong, whether you agree with it or not, whether it should be taken as fact. In this day and age, if it starts to develop momentum, people believe it to be true. So you as an organization, as an individual, have to be able to counter it. And how you counter it, how you message it, how you express yourself with empathy and action towards whomever else is making a claim is so critical. And the Navy taught me a lot of that fundamental foundational mindset that I was blessed to be able to have that experience.
You know what? You took the initiative to actually reach out to some of these people. I think it's something that should not be overlooked, though. I mean, it's great that they, you know, foster that type of environment. But one of the things that I'm seeing, especially as I work with some younger professionals in, you know, commercial real estate and business, some people are introverts, you know, and it's a little harder to get them to reach out, to tap somebody on the shoulder, to push forward on things. But the fact that you were able to do that, I think, is a huge part about your character and what you do that should be recognized.
You know, well, thank you for that. I came about it through the school of hard knocks. I was I've always been an extrovert, you know, and I didn't take a speech class in college. I was the guy that you told to shut up and let somebody else talk in class and that kind of stuff. But that aside, I guess I was brought up with a mindset that, you know, do what you're told and everything will be fine. And I'll go back to my Navy days. You have that mindset, you're not being effective, because there are circumstances where there's no right answer. There's no clear answer. There's no definitive answer. And you have to rely on your judgment to get through that. And also have to anticipate what's forthcoming in an operational environment. And so with that, I learned when I wanted to really pursue something that I needed to have that same mindset for myself. If I really wanted to go after a career that I'd had no real introduction before somebody handed me this part-time duty as almost a check in the box, then I realized it was incumbent upon me to go create that opportunity. And you're right. I teach at San Diego State. And one of the things that I'm teaching the juniors and seniors who are taking my class is that they're enough. I emphasize that over and over again, that you are enough. That doesn't mean you know everything. You don't know half of what you'll need to know, but you are enough to go and find it out, and it's not going to come to you. And if you can instill that mindset on that ability to take a chance on you, the rewards are so greater. But to that end, and I'll just end with this thought, we have to change our mindset as to what it means to not succeed. We don't succeed more often than we succeed, and that is perfectly okay. In fact, I would say not succeeding is actually a success in and of itself, because you learn what not to do. The only time you fail, and that's a different word for me, is when you give up on yourself, when you don't try, when you don't put forth your full effort, right? Thomas Edison, I forget how many, it was in the thousands, right, of attempts he made to create the light bulb before he was successful. And people are like, oh, weren't you discredited, or weren't you disheartened? Every time you weren't successful, and he said, or he said, every time you failed, he goes, I didn't fail. He said, I just learned 1,900, whatever it was, right? Times, you know, ways to not make a light bulb. So we have to have that mindset. And I think that's true regardless, whether you're in real estate, whether you're in my profession, whether you're, you know, any, go and pursue any sort of thing. You've got to change the way in which we view success and failure.
Yeah, even the definition of success. I mean, there's so much to unpack with this, because number one, that growth mindset, there's a meta skill here that I think is really important. That's learning how to learn, right? So no matter what situation you're in, like, you'll figure it out, or you'll find the resources to figure it out. And I feel like that's something that is practiced. And what you talk about is like the not succeeding is, are there steps to get there, to your growth, and you're constantly in that state of growth. However, I can say I would like to not succeed a little less. Well, I don't know if that's the best way to put it. Sometimes it's like, okay, I got a lot of lessons here. I'm good. I got it.
No, I get it. Like, the saying, you know, the universe only gives you what you can handle. I wish the universe would stop thinking I'm a badass, right? That kind of stuff, right? But I guess I would change it differently. I change that sort of mindset. I don't know if I'm necessarily concerned about how many times I don't succeed, but I would rather not succeed at the same thing once. In other words, I don't want to relearn the same lessons over and over again. And look, I'm not speaking from a holier than thou attitude, right? Professionally and personally, I have my cuts and scrapes and bruises, and I have the scars from the repeated times I had to experience something before I went, yeah, maybe I should stop doing that, right? And so we all have that. But to the extent we can avoid having to relearn something, I think it should be our goal. If you don't succeed any less, the question that I have is, well, then are you trying enough, right? Or are you getting complacent? Or, you know, and if you're happy, cool, right? Knock yourself out. But if you in the back of my mind say, woulda, coulda, shoulda, or if only I, you should listen to that, because it's telling you need to take more opportunities to learn and to try.
Yeah. Well, I would say one of the things that, and I love this. I love this conversation because
100%.
I like trying things. I like pushing the limits, and not in a way that's, you know, dangerous in any way. Not like that, because I don't ride motorcycles. I don't skydive. But like pushing them is like, hey, I like that. I want to try that and give it a shot. And I feel like sometimes, well, I'm turning this into a therapy session here, but sometimes in my life career, it's like, well, maybe if I would have just stayed on this straight and narrow path, you know, I could have been X or successful or made more or whatever those things are. But like, I've been trying different things throughout my career and I like the people that I meet. I like what the person that I've become. But yeah, that does creep in sometimes of like, maybe I adventured a little too much in trying different things. Maybe not. Hey, I don't know. I waver.
No, hey, look, and I appreciate this therapy session. Thanks for saving me the $200 I normally would spend on this during the week. I appreciate it.
You're the therapist. You're the
physician. Heal thyself, right? We all go through that, and I think so. Sort of circling back, right? Before people listen to this podcast, going, "What the hell's wrong with these two?" The idea in my world, right? And I think it's true for leaderships or people who are entrepreneurs or looking for new ventures is the term you have to be what I call confidently vulnerable, which sounds mm-hmm. like an oxymoron, but it really isn't. It's the confidence that you can try new things and you can learn from them. And ultimately, if you step up to the plate enough to borrow baseball vernacular and you swing at pitches, you're going to get your hits, right? Now you've got to be calculated on that. You don't want to throw pitches in the dirt. You want to get out of the plate when something's coming at your head, right? So you don't make unnecessary risks. But don't be afraid to necessarily try new things. And more to the point, in my little world of crisis and where I see I get involved is when an organization can't be vulnerable enough to recognize where they need to admit that they didn't do something perfectly. And look, I get it. There are plenty of examples where people, individuals, competitors, rivals, government officials will overstep their bounds and make accusations of an entity or an individual that are completely unfounded, right? It's total BS. But oftentimes, as my grandmother said, there's three sides to every story. Three: yours, mine, and the truth. Somewhere in there, you did something that may, without malicious intent, right? Without any sort of desire to harm somebody, you did something that didn't meet expectations. You didn't meet your own expectations. You didn't follow through. We're all human. We are a really flawed species. And so that's going to happen. And if you can be confidently vulnerable to admit when those happen with empathy and action, then you wind up diffusing most of the crises that I get involved. Because when I do that, people get into bunker mode, right? And especially because we're all so fixated on what people are saying in this virtual meta world, to use your meta, that we are now so addicted towards. Present company accepted. You know, I had to put in checks to myself in order to do that. You can be vulnerable enough to do so. You diffuse the situations at hand. And for those that aren't, especially when they really is something they need to fix and they need to be open about that, I get in and it'll cost you a lot of time, a lot of money.
A couple of questions on that, because let's say a company wants to be vulnerable and admit but there's a legal side of this too, right? And are they admitting fault? I mean, I'm sure that has to be something that gets weighed in the process.
Yeah, at least half of the matters that I work on involve litigation. In fact, attorneys tend to be my biggest referral partners. They're the ones who are calling me into a matter because of something they're working on. Without question, right? If you are going to make some statements, there should be an evaluation about how much risk the company takes on by admitting something that then provides them some liability exposure. Somebody can sue them or something like that based on something that's said. And there are ways to check that as well. But I would also submit you can reduce the risk of liability to such a degree that you go out of business. I'll give you an example. There was in my backyard, I get clients from all over the country, but in my backyard, I didn't work on this. There was a large healthcare organization that was the victim of a ransomware attack. And it didn't affect a lot of the sensitive information, but it took their scheduling system, their online scheduling system, and their billing systems offline. And for 2 weeks, 2 weeks, this healthcare company, through official statements, would only say that they were suffering from an event. That was it. Everybody else knew it was a ransomware attack, right? Walk like a duck, talk like a duck. It was a duck. And the reason they did is because the lawyers involved said, please don't say anything else from that. You don't know the full extent. You don't know the circumstances we're dealing with. And I don't know this to be sure, but when it's that long, at least in my experiences, the organization that took it down wasn't some kid in, you know, mom's basement. It was an organized crime syndicate from somewhere overseas. Pick your nation that was attacking your system. But because they weren't transparent enough and empathetic enough, 2 weeks was an eternity, and patients went elsewhere in some cases. And certainly the goodwill that this medical organization, this nonprofit medical organization had, was eroded, right? I mean, we're still talking about it years later. This thing happened pre-COVID, and not pre-COVID, right after COVID. So it was like 2021 or something like that. So 3 years later, we're still talking about this. That's not a good sign, right? So yeah, you need to certainly keep in mind the legal liability, but recognize that if you do not showcase an empathetic, authentic, action-oriented response quickly to a crisis, you're not going to have any customers. You're not going to have any investors. You're not going to have any business partners. Lawsuits are still going to come regardless. And I just put that out there as food for thought.
When you're faced with crises, are you numbed by it in any way? I mean, have you seen so much that you're kind of like, oh, this one of these guys again? Or like when these things come across your desk or hit your inbox, I mean, do you still get excited? Is there like a rush? Is there a challenge that you get with the different things?
Yeah. So I really appreciate the question. The answer is no, I'm not numb to it. But I will say that with experience comes perspective. For many organizations, they're seeing, and understandably so, their professional and by extension, the executive's personal reputation flash in front of their eyes. And so this is a real genuine anxiety laden time for them, right? They don't know which end is up. And because I've seen different things beforehand, I often can come in, and I pride myself on coming in as sort of the voice of reason. Like, okay, here's the path forward, and let's get moving on that. Let's move forward quickly to do so. But hopefully I express the same empathy and action to this organization and individual that they need to do for their audiences, because it is a tough time. And look, I also have the luxury of selecting clients that I want to work with. And I've worked with people who were going to go to jail, like for something that they did wrong, for criminal acts they committed. So I don't shy away from that. But in all those cases, they're generally, you know, they're white collar crimes, and they're people who lost their head, and they are now so remorseful for that, and they are ready to stand tall and be held account for that one and to make amends. And if those individuals come in, you know, to my virtual door or physical door, I'll help them all day long. The ones that want to use me as a human shield, the ones that want me to, and, you know, we've got plenty of national and global examples of that currently. You just pick a courthouse in New York and you can see that, right? Not to get political, but I mean, come on. You've got to sort of check yourself, because I will not put myself in a position where I don't believe the client. Right. And I'm not a public defender, so I don't have to represent them. I can throw that fish back in the water. But I will also answer it this way, just to finish this thought that you would ask me about, you know, am I numb to it? No, I'm not. I do not try to take on the stresses of the client. It's my job to be able to provide perspective, and I don't want to necessarily get walled into that. I will say I've had to check myself, and this is something I've had to learn over the last few years. I mean, to make sure that because things have to move so quickly, and time is of the essence when I get hired, I don't want to turn the rest of my life into a crisis, right? And I would find myself, and there's a whole bunch of backstories I won't get into, but like a light bulb might be out of my house. And I was like, oh my God, we got to fix that. We got to change that right now, right now, right now. Really? Right now? Does it really need to be right now? It's a light bulb. Like, take a moment, right? It's okay. I found I was doing that. Like, everything became an imperative. And so I've learned emotional and mental health disciplines to check myself to make sure that it doesn't spill over. Because when your wife looks at you and says, you are being a world-class a-hole, you should listen to that. So that's at least my experience.
So I really like what you talked about balance before in another regard, but I'd imagine here, and based on what you're saying, being that, having that perspective of calm and balance, but you've seen it before, you know, maybe not exactly this. We have what it takes to get through this. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really important way to conduct yourself and your business. I mean, it's similarly, but different. I remember one of my knee injuries, because I blew up both of my knees at different times. Ooh. Yeah, it sucked. But yeah, I remember going in to see the doctor. It was the second knee, because I tore both of my patella tendons. And Oof. The doctor was like, wow, I've never seen this before. I was like, that's not what I want to hear from my doctor, exactly. My surgeon. Even if I know what he meant, he's like, I've never seen anyone do that to both of their knees. I know what he meant. Still, it's like, that's not what I wanted to hear coming into this office.
To your point, I mean, you know, like there've been stories of late about, you know, doors falling off of airplanes, right? And all things like that. Yeah. It's scary. But, you know, you fly in a plane, there's a bunch of turbulence and things are bouncing around there. And you can see, you know, you feel the tension rising, right? In the cabin. And I always check to see what are the flight attendants doing right now. And if they're calm, I'm calm. When they're freaking out, then I'll get concerned. But if they're looking around like,
that's a good point,
just another day at the office, then I think we're going to be okay.
Yeah. Question about the profile of the companies or the people. Again, you don't even have to answer if you want to, but is there something that you see that's a common theme of your clients?
So,
people getting over their skis or being a little bit too ambitious or doing something. Is there anything that you can share?
Yeah, no, sure. So I have the privilege of working with organizations, big and small, nonprofit, for-profit, various industries, locations, and all of that. I mean, from sports entertainment companies of $500 million to literally $2 million local nonprofits doing good work in historical preservations, right, of a neighborhood or things like that. And in most instances, the reaction by the players involved tend to be the same, right? And I guess I would categorize it this way. First off, it usually involves somebody being candid and forthright at a time where they feel they just can't be, whether that's a legal reason or they feel like they just don't have the space to sort of show a little bit of vulnerability or things like that. They will all find themselves in that position. And then the types of things that they face are very similar. And they involve people, an employee taking a pot shot at you or claims of harassment or hostile work environment or wage and hour or favoritism or whatever, big and small. CEO is not doing what they're supposed to, and poor product or service deliverables. That right there, or perceptions, I should say, that encompasses 2/3 of the kind of things I work on for big and small. The other third are wickedly out of, you know, nowhere. Like, I was the spokesperson and media relations person about a year and a half ago for the farm in San Mateo that was the site of the mass shooting where a farmer killed 7 people, critically injured an 8 before turning himself in. He didn't kill himself. He turned himself in. You know, that's something that I've dealt with murder cases before, but a mass shooting, that was a first, right? That was sort of an escalation of things that I'd seen beforehand. Mass accidents, overturned tractor trailers involving casualties and property and spillage, those kind of things I've dealt with. You know, those are, I think, the things that people, when they think of crisis, that's what they think, right? Or like mass demonstrations on college campuses and all that. By the way, Columbia University, call me. They're, you know, but I just, you know, big or small, the things that everybody deals with involve people. And it's very hard in this day and age for individuals to feel like that they can be open and transparent and vulnerable. And the more you can be, doesn't mean that you're weak. It doesn't mean you're not a good leader, especially if you still hold true to your convictions. But to be a little bit more authentic gets you out of certain circumstances, or at least doesn't escalate the problem you're currently facing. The more I can help businesses and organizations do it, the better it is for them.
So I guess when I asked before, are you numb to it? I guess I should say, when you're faced with something, like, do you feel your like tension rise the same, or is it like you notice it and then you quickly come back to baseline? How do you know what I'm saying? Do you feel the rush, if you will, like, oh, like here's another case, like, I don't know the best way to ask that question, but I think you get back to that baseline to act efficiently, effectively, in a timely manner?
I follow you, right? And this goes back to my military training, is when there would be accidents, mishaps, whether we were trained or not, the idea was that I would be focused on, okay, you know what you have to get done. Let's stay singularly focused on that. Tune out some other things that you're feeling to get this thing done and get this thing done now. And, you know, we trained on ships for shipboard fires and hot war environments where somebody was shooting at us and it was causing equipment and people casualties and things like that. And you worked on that. And in the crisis communications world, you know, accusations and things that starting to go viral on Instagram or LinkedIn or Facebook, you got to respond to that quickly. So I get kind of focused on that, where I have to check myself again, not necessarily taking on the stress of the client, but I find that when the matter starts to diffuse and starts to wane, is when all those things you blocked out, all those emotions, all those sort of, triggering events, I guess, for lack of a better word, for me, come to the surface. So I need a downtime to check myself, because it can mess with your head. And I don't think I'm alone in this one. I mean, I'm just talking about it from my little PR world, but everybody will have that moment, right? You have a serious problem. Somebody gets into an accident, right? Somebody gets in a car accident. You're taking a loved one to the ER, you're getting them checked out, you know, you sort of get into that focus mode. And then it's after the doc comes in and says, person's going to be all right, you know, or here's the seal and here's the recovery, is when you sort of let yourself relax and open up. And then you see all of a sudden somebody loses it right there, right? Because now they're just feeling all the things they blocked out. And that's it for me. So I practice daily mental health exercises, meditation. I picked up guitar again after a long absence, jamming with a bunch of friends of mine for once a month. A couple guys up in Orange County who are salt of the earth people, and others as they come in. My wife and I go on hikes. I love to cook. And teaching, actually, that I do at San Diego State is a nice respite from it. Really helps get my head out of the day-to-day stuff. And I think that's important for everybody.
So we touched on a lot of different things here. So when you mentioned your teaching experience and what you're doing, is there any common theme of maybe something you already discussed today? Is there anything that you really are seeing that's resonating with the youth that you're teaching, or the students that you're teaching?
Yeah, I've been, because it's, you know, these are juniors and seniors, like I said, and we talked about sort of their willingness to take risks. What I'm trying to convey to them is the idea of, you don't have to know everything right now. You're not supposed to know everything right now. And I think there's this fallacy that because they're 1 to 3 semesters away from graduating, that they're deathly afraid of what it is next. Because all of a sudden there's no syllabus, right? There's no schedule. There's no timeline. And for some of these students, they've had been regimented in the school curricula, you know, since they were in first grade, right? Things were scheduled out for them in such finite degrees that all of a sudden when they graduate, somebody's like, yep, congratulations, here's a paper, handshake, put your tassel on the other side and go. And they go where? I don't know. It's all for you. And they don't know what to do, right? I have one student, she has a great line. She was telling me, because she's getting set to graduate, and she goes, I don't know where I'm going, but I'm trying to get there. And I thought, that is flipping brilliant, because what she's going to do is she's going to try. You're not supposed to know. It's okay. I think that's the common theme. And I remember that to some degree, though it was a little bit different for me, because, you know, I had an ROTC scholarship. So I knew that if I graduated, you know, I was going to raise my right hand and be commissioned as an officer. And I kind of knew I was going to go drive ships. So for me, it was when I left the Navy on active duty and I got my first job in the private sector working for tech PR. And it took a couple of years for me to sort of get my feet wet as to, well, where is it that I want to go with this career? You know, a lot of people said, well, why don't you just go government PR, go civilian military PR? Because there was a bunch of opportunities there. And I was like, well, I know I can do that, but let me try my hand at this. And trust me, I had anxiety for the first couple of years trying to figure it out. And as we talked about, I'm still trying to learn, right? I'm still trying to figure out what it is I want to do when I grow up. But I can't imagine doing anything else there. But if you had told me as a 30-year-old self 24 years ago that I'd be talking to you, talking about crisis communications, my own services with national footprint, right? I would have said, you're nuts. That wasn't like that was a pipe dream that I thought I'd never be good enough for. It wasn't even part of my thought process. Like,
Yeah.
I can do that? I guess so. I mean, you know, dating myself here, but 24 years ago, you know, MySpace wasn't even around, let alone Facebook, for crying out loud. Like, we didn't know what social media was. We barely had flip phones, for crying out loud.
Well, that's one of the cool things about, you know, being able to develop your talents and your skills in a way that is in line with who you are as a person and how you move. Because, you know, when that opportunity meets and the timing is right, I mean, you don't know what you don't know, and things that don't even exist yet. You know, maybe you are building yourself to be ready for something that's not even here yet. So
it's 100%.
Pretty cool.
100%. Yeah.
Well, since you brought
preparation,
that up,
preparation is luck equals preparation plus opportunity. Who knows what life will bring us, and we just have to embrace it.
But since you mentioned, if you could, in hindsight, and you mentioned some other things, like, wild, just put it out there. If you could do anything, if you're doing over, like, oh, I would like to be, let's say, a guitar player or a teacher. Or is there anything else you could see yourself doing, like, as an adult or right now in your life besides what you're currently doing?
Yeah, people are like, well, what else would you do if you weren't doing this? I can't imagine doing anything else that would be as fun right now, right? For a whole host of reasons. Mm-hmm. But it's like, people are like, what other interests do you have? Community theater, play-by-play for minor league baseball, right? Like, on a streaming app. Or, you know, major league baseball, if that was the case. Though they travel way, way, way too much. Like, I traveled. I was gone from the Navy. I like being home with my wife more often than not. Thank you very much. So not doing that, right? But, like, executive chef coaching. But the thing about all those is I love the fact, and teaching is one example, right? I love the fact to do that there because they're hobbies. They're hobbies for me right now, right? I cook when I want to cook. I play when I want to play. I teach one or two classes a semester. And none of those, I think they're fun because none of those require me to generate a source of income. I mean, you get a little bit of compensation from the university. And believe me, the money is not the reason you go into teaching at the university setting like you would for anything else. But I do it because I enjoy it, right? And the journey's there. But yeah, I got a ton of other things. So whenever I decide to be done with this, which I can't see a day when that happens, but whenever I'm done with that, I got plenty of other stuff to do. And oh, by the way, travel with my wife, thank you very much, is also on the list. We're going to do some other traveling later this year, and I so look forward to that. And, you know, I can do my job from anywhere. And that's the beautiful thing about it, too, is we live in a day and age where I wouldn't have thought about that. But because we're all connected through the interwebs, I'm accessible wherever I'm at, and I'm grateful to be.
Yeah, well, and the paints by which you do your art aren't going to run out. Like, there's always going to be crises.
Oh. We are an imperfect species. I mean, I say kind of, you know, facetiously, not facetiously, just kidding aside, I say, you know, I have full faith and confidence in the human species to continue to say and do inappropriate things in inopportune times. But that sounds
and
a little bit
crass. And have it be captured online. Right. Yeah, and have it be shared online.
Nowadays, my God. But that's not to be judgmental on people, because believe me, everybody's got something going on. Everybody's got a skeleton. I don't care who you are. Everybody's got a skeleton. And we live in a day and age where we sort of get that amplified, I think, because we all feel overwhelmed. So if somebody else falls and trips, there's a lot of people, not me, but there's a lot of people that rejoice in that because it validates their own hesitation to take chances, right? Dave Chappelle had a line that I heard, when a hero stumbles, the cowards rejoice, because nothing makes a coward feel better than to see a brave guy fall. And And there's truth in that, right? But truthfully, we're just an imperfect species. We try our best, and we have an emotional EQ, we have an EQ and an IQ that are at such high levels that it gets in our own way. So
now,
to the degree I can help people be vulnerable and get through that, I feel like I'm doing a really good service.
Well, Dave, thank you so much for spending this time and sharing your story and then some of the, you know, your journey and everything that you've been through. Is there any parting words that you want to share, or how people can find you, who should find you, where they can reach out to you?
Yeah, I appreciate that, Dustin. This has been a blast, but it's been one of the best podcast discussions I've had in a long time. So
yeah,
I appreciate
this is fun.
You
this is fun stuff.
Having me on there. You can Google me, Dave Oates, Crisis PR. My LinkedIn profile comes up. My website, PR Security Service, comes up, and a bunch of other things. But Dave Oates, Crisis PR, Google me. I will pop up. You can find me in all sorts of ways to do so. But the parting word that I guess I would leave the listeners with is, it's not as bad as it seems. And if you are vulnerable enough to address it, you will be able to get through it. I have not, it doesn't mean that there's not going to be some pain involved with that, but I promise you, you can live another day. And I think if nothing else, I hope people take that to heart, because we live in this world that, as imperfect as we are, we do offer people a second chance if they're just open, honest, transparent, and vulnerable enough to do so.
Sage words. Thank you, Dave Oates. It's been a pleasure.
Likewise, Dustin. Be well.